Bandeham Sri Guru.
The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 28, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on November 24th, 2000, in Mumbai.
Tattvavettu Mahabaho Gunakarma Vibhagayo Gunaguneshu Bharatanta Itimatva Natsajjati. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Mighty Armed, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The knower of the Absolute Truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity is part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge. And he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Tattvavit, for he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. This satsang program is especially being held in honor of the recent marriage of Anil and Anju. They have come all the way from Delhi, especially to beg for the blessings of all of the Vaishnavas and to serve the devotees by sponsoring prasad and inviting everyone to Gopinath's home to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. We are especially very pleased that they are taking so much trouble to begin their relationship. After marriage, they went to Vrindavan and they went to Mayapur, Navadvip Dham. And after this, they're going back to Vrindavan. And they've come to Bombay especially to worship Sri Radha Gopinath and to serve their devotees. This is the purpose of human life, and this is the purpose of all of our responsibilities in human life, that they should be dovetailed in the service of Krishna and his devotees. Today's verse from Bhagavad Gita is very nicely explaining what actual knowledge of the Absolute Truth is. Real knowledge is not simply theoretical. It is applied. We may read Gita and study in a very scholarly way, but not understand anything of what Gita says. Srila Prabhupada would often tell the story from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita about a very simple Brahmin who was practically illiterate. He lived in the South Indian province where the temple of Srirangam was present. And his Guru Maharaj told him that you should read the entire Bhagavad Gita every day. So he would sit in the courtyard of the temple, really seriously struggling to recite the Bhagavad Gita for hours and hours and hours a day. Now we know that Srirangam was the headquarters of Jamunacharya and his most empowered disciple Ramanujacharya, especially 500 years back. It was a very high seat of scholarship. Many great, great pundits, Sanskrit scholars and philosophers would visit the temple each day. And when they saw this very simple, poor Brahmin trying to somehow struggle through the recitation of Gita, not pronouncing the syllables correctly, sometimes they laughed at him. At other times they criticized him, but certainly they did not give him much respect. But the very speaker of the Gita, Krishna, appeared in this age of Kali in his most munificent, merciful form, that of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Krishna appears with the sentiments and the complexion of Srimati Radharani in order to give what no other incarnation has ever given, the highest ecstatic rasas of Braj Leela to anyone and everyone without considering their qualifications or disqualifications. The Lord, during his South India tour, came to Srirangam, and he decided to stay there for 4 months because it was Chaturmasya. Traditionally, a sannyasi does not travel during Chaturmasya. He stays in one place and just does his bhajan and preaching. So the Lord came to the temple of Sriranganath, and there he saw that simple Brahmin reciting Gita with tears of love in his eyes. The Lord was very pleased to see this. He said, "Can you tell me what part of the Gita you are reading?" The Brahmin explained that, "Actually, I don't even know. Sometimes I speak correctly, sometimes I speak incorrectly. I don't know the difference. I'm not a learned person." The Lord asked, "Then why are there tears in your eyes?" He said, "Because when I think of this picture in my heart, here is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all masters, the creator, maintainer, annihilator of everything that exists, the ultimate goal of life. And he is taking the position of the servant of his own devotee, driving his chariot as Parthasarathi. How the Lord loves his devotee, how the Lord serves his devotee, brings tears to my eyes." When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, in great ecstasy, he embraced that Brahmin and told him, "You truly understand the essence of the Gita." The Lord invested within the heart of that devotee the pure realization of ecstatic love of God, which is the ultimate purpose of all the scriptures. So he may not have been so learned, but he was applying the basic essence of the teachings to his life. And therefore he received the mercy of the Lord. And every day for the next 4 months, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally came to bless him with his association because he loved him so dearly. Theoretical knowledge is essential so that we know what is to be done and what is not to be done. But unless that knowledge is applied to our life, there will be no realization. After all, Krishna does not require our memory capacity. He doesn't require our scholarship. He is the knower of everything. Vedaham samatitani bharatamanani charjana babashani chabutani mantu vedana kashjana. He knows everything, past, present, and future. He knows all living beings. He's in the heart of everyone. But when a devotee honestly and sincerely tries to please the Lord with devotion, the Lord willingly accepts the position of being conquered by the love of that devotee. Just as the devotee of the Lord is always eager to serve Krishna, Krishna is always eager to serve his pure, unalloyed devotees. And that is the great treasure that is meant to be received through studying of the scriptures. Knowledge is to understand that we are not this body. We are eternally part and parcel of Krishna. Conditioned life means to think that I am this body and to act according to the interests of this body and mind. We have gross and subtle bodies. The gross body is what we can see, what we can touch, what we could taste, what we could smell, what we could feel. Various combinations of the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. The subtle body is the mind, the intelligence, and the ahankar, the false ego. These eight are the material elements. But Krishna explains in Gita that besides these eight elements, there is the eternal soul, which is the support of the universe. So to think we are this body and to act to serve the purposes of the body and mind is illusion. It is ignorance. It is material life. And our every thought and every action based on this principle is a cause of bondage by the three modes of material nature: sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamaguna. But knowledge is to understand that I'm not this body. I'm that eternal spirit soul, part of Krishna that's residing within this body. And therefore my action should be to serve Krishna. That is who I am. It is my constitutional nature. In every respect, in every aspect of life, less intelligent people consider religion to be something that they place beside their materialistic endeavors in life. That I work hard, I make money, I raise my family, we enjoy so many of the pleasures that this world affords. And once a week I go to do some pujas, or I give some charity, or I give some donation. But actual understanding of Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, is if we are the eternal servants of Krishna, if that is our nature, then everything we do, everything we think, at every moment of our life must be for the service of God. It cannot be something separate from the rest of our life. It has to be integrated in every aspect of our life. That is knowledge. Applied knowledge. And how to apply the spiritual endeavor in every single aspect of our life is taught in Bhagavad Gita. One who actually understands the Bhagavad Gita is striving and struggling to remember Krishna and serve Krishna at every moment. And this simple Brahman, he didn't care whether he was humiliated, criticized, or laughed at. His Guru Maharaj told him, read Gita every day, and he was going to read Gita every day because he was in the mood of a servant. And factually, when you serve God, you will not be very much appreciated or respected by people who are too much engrossed in the material ways of life. Because materialism and spiritualism are very opposite. In materialism, the goal of life is to find material pleasures, sense gratification. Now, there's people in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Their type of sense gratification may be different. For people in the mode of ignorance, tamaguna, their sense gratification is getting intoxicated with drugs or alcohol, sleeping too much, watching scenes of violence. People very much take pleasure in seeing violence. Cinemas, televisions, people love to see people savagely, brutally killed, tortured. And today, in the Hollywood setting, they have developed these special effects that could make violence so more horrifying than real. And people love to see this. They pay their money to see this. This is the mode of ignorance. Other people in the mode of passion, they like lots of sex enjoyment. They like the passion of making lots and lots of money. All kinds of sporting events. And people in the mode of goodness, they like to listen to classical music, nice ragas, or they like to give in charity, or look at art or poetry. But actually, it's all simply to satisfy the senses and the mind. It's all the cause of bondage. Bhagavad Gita teaches us that spirituality, in truth, means that we are no longer concerned with pleasing the body and mind, but our concern is in pleasing God, in serving God. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad shtrohoshi vidasi yat yat tapasyasi gonte yat tat kurushuma darpana. Krishna says all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, everything should be done as an offering to me. Now to materialistic people, this is crazy. So many desires to enjoy, and you want to do everything for God? And they create so many philosophies to justify their materialistic way of thinking. I remember when I spoke at one university, the professor was a lady, and she was a Christian. And she said to me, that, why are you a sannyasi? I said, because this is the way I'm trying to serve my Guru Maharaj and serve society. Because actually we are not concerned what ashram one's in. We're concerned with service. Sannyasi has a particular type of service he renders. If you're a sannyasi just to be renounced and abnegate the pleasures of your senses, you're not going to become purified. The purpose of your renunciation is to engage your mind, body, words fully, wholesale, in the service of God. That's what real sannyas means. Krishna says a real sannyasi is not one who lights no fire and does no work. It's one who works for me. So she says, but God created us especially to have sex. And because God has given that pleasure as the ultimate blessing of this world, it is an offense to God to deny it. Hare Krishna. She was really convinced of this. And she started explaining to me the deep, profound spiritual experiences she was having every time she has sex life. Fortunately, I was with one of my godbrothers while she was talking. And she was even quoting books. She was very learned. She had a PhD. She says that sex life is the ultimate blessing and gift of God in this world. That the fact, if you feel pleasure, then God feels pleasure. And you're giving God the greatest pleasure by enjoying His mercy. Hare Krishna. So I don't have a PhD, but I asked her a question. I said, if this is the case, Jesus never had sex. So that means He's offensive to God. And not only that, but almost every one of the 12 apostles, except one or two, they were all celibate, renunciates. So that means your whole religion is following people who are offensive to God. Why do you want to follow them? She thought for a few minutes, and then she said, I never thought of that. She said, maybe you're right. And then we explained that Jesus said, you cannot serve God and mammon simultaneously. You have to choose who your master is. Sense gratification and devotional service to the Lord are opposites. Now we see in Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna was a grihastha, married man with children, very responsible in his occupational duty. He was a warrior, a statesman. And he performed his work with full energy. Now here in the Bhagavad Gita, he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He saw opposing forces, the Kurus and the Pandavas. And he saw friends, relatives, and beloved well-wishers on both sides. And he decided, I will not fight. I will become a renunciate. I will leave this battlefield. If I go to the forest, perhaps, but I will not fight. So Krishna spoke over 700 verses, the most celebrated dialogue in the history of humanity, just to convince Arjuna that he must perform his prescribed duty. But how one's consciousness should be performing his prescribed duty is the actual message of Gita. Some people believe that Gita teaches that work is worship. Just do your duty, don't cause harm to any other living beings, and that's dharma. That's not what Krishna said. He didn't tell Arjuna not to harm any other living beings. He told him to fight and kill millions of people. So out goes that, no harming human beings. And just do your duty, work is worship. Bhagavad Gita would have been one sloka. Do your duty, work is worship. That's all Krishna would have had to say. All these verses are telling us in what consciousness we are meant to perform our duty. Krishna's teaching the highest principle of non-violence. He's teaching us the highest principle of morality. He's teaching us the application of spirituality in our daily lives. And actually, there is no less likely occupation to be a yogi than a warrior on a battlefield. If Arjuna can be perfectly God-conscious doing that, then it's not very unlikely to be successful in doing it as a doctor, or a housewife, or an engineer, or a businessman, or a teacher. Whatever our varna, whatever our ashram, whatever our particular occupation may be, we should understand that our identity is that we are eternally servants of Krishna. We're not this body. So our goal should not be simply to maintain and satisfy our body or the bodies of others. The goal is to purify our heart and develop love for Krishna and serve Krishna. If you build a good foundation, then everything that's built upon that foundation has strength. Krishna teaches us that we must learn to always remember Him. Because life is very, very short. The years go very fast. The older you get, the faster your life passes. We all remember when we're little children playing. Now we're passing through so many phases of life. Today I happen to be 50 years old, according to Vedic calendar. Half of a century is gone. How many more years are left? Padam padam yadvi padam nadesham. We could die at any minute. And the success of life is not how much money you made, not what education you have, not how many votes you got in the elections. Because all of these things will simply be washed away by the waves of time. And at the time of death, there's nothing left. Everything is stripped away from you. You may have a beautiful home. You may have fame and popularity. Wonderful, loving family. It's all extinguished at the time of death. The purpose of life is at that moment of death to remember Krishna. Because if you remember Krishna, you go back to Krishna, to the spiritual world where life is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And not only that, if you remember Krishna at the time of death, all your relatives for many generations, past and future, they all get liberated by the mercy of the Lord. That's compassion. That's service. But somehow or other, we are living in this world, as Arjuna was. And we have many relative responsibilities. But all relative responsibilities should be relative to Krishna. Relativity means related. This is a relative world. That means everything is interrelated in a mundane aspect. But in Krishna consciousness, we see everything's relationship to Krishna. Krishna is the creator of everything. He's the proprietor of everything. Bhagavad Gita teaches that the formula for peace is to simply understand Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suradam sarva bhutanam gyatvam am shanti vrichyati. Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And everything is ultimately meant for His enjoyment. And He's the best well-wishing friend of all living beings. So if we're working for money, we want to make sure that while we're working for our money, we're thinking of Krishna. We're understanding that this money is going to be used for Krishna, to create a family that's Krishna conscious, to buy food that will be offered to Krishna, to facilitate a home that is a temple of Krishna, to serve the devotees of Krishna, to give in charity to those who are in need by giving them Krishna in his many forms. Could be prasad, could be in speaking to them, being kind to them. If a person is without clothes and you have clothes, it's the duty of a grihastha to provide, but in such a way that they remember Krishna. In this way, Bhagavad Gita is applied. And this is the essence of this wonderful verse today, that we should know the difference between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Because it is very rare in this age of Kali, even for the most professed religious people, to understand the difference between work for fruitive results and work in devotion. Practically the whole world of religion, in the East and the West, they consider religion to be work for fruitive results in the name of God. And this was a very unique contribution that Srila Prabhupada brought to the Western world. And he also brought it back to India. He was teaching pure devotional service. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha ishami masamcha. You abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Prabhupada would not compromise. He was very liberal, very tolerant of whatever conditioned or fallen situation a person was in. He would, like a mother and father, just nurse them to a higher state of consciousness. But the knowledge he gave was without compromise. You may be addicted to so many materialistic activities, that's all right. Take a little prasad. Chant the holy names whenever you can. You're wonderful. Continue on. But he would also speak that this is what Maya is and this is Krishna. And don't be mistaken. Don't justify anything. If you're fallen, you're fallen, but don't think you're elevated. But in religion today, we want to be fallen and think we're elevated, because we do not understand the difference between work for fruitive results and work in devotion. We must have the spiritual masters and the sadhus, the saintly people, to help us. We must have the scriptures. Otherwise, the society around us will drag us down once again to this materialistic pseudo-conception of religion. Prabhupada said, if there's one thing you should have faith in, I'm not cheating you. A person who teaches fruitive activities to be real religion is cheating. Prabhupada taught pure devotional service, that whatever we do, it should be in the spirit of understanding our constitutional position as servants of the Lord. And whatever our particular level of consciousness is, we should always be striving for that perfection. So today, we are very happy to see Anil and Anju. They have begun their marriage in a very, very auspicious way, in the spirit of service. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. They have especially come here to Radha Gopinath Temple in Bombay to offer their heartfelt services to all the devotees by bringing them together, bringing all of us together to hear about Krishna, to chant the glories of Krishna, to be in the presence of Krishna. So it is my sincere request that all the present devotees pray to Sri Radha Gopinath that their life together be filled with sincere devotion and that Krishna's blessings may always be upon them. And at this time, we will offer that blessings by chanting Hari Bol. And now Rohini Nandan Prabhu will lead us in kirtan of the holy names. Thank you very much.